Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Well, look who's in the house today.
Look, now there you are.
Now there's that face. That face that somehow, oh, how are you, listeners? Oh, it's been a while. Well,
you know, actually, it's a podcast, so they don't see our face. Maybe it's the sweetest sounds I've ever heard. Maybe
a little Bob Goulet for us, Rob.
Oh, I was trying to do Richard Kiley, but that's okay.
Oh, Richard, one of my favorite voices of all time. There's that YouTube clip of him singing what they call the wind Mariah. Oh my gosh, it is just truly magical. I love Richard Kiley.
Can I ask you a really stupid question?
Sure.
Is it, why don't they just say they call the wind Maria?
It's right, because it's spelled Maria. Yeah,
wouldn't
like
it be
Maria too.
Mariah? Mariah?
Yeah, like why Mariah? But it's Maria.
You know
Maria.
That? Do you know why?
I do not know why. I should find
listeners.
This out.
No, listeners.
Maria, what a great name. I mean, that's like they call the wind Maria. But maybe that because it's a whole thing about. You know, because in the show, there's the whole Mexican contingency. Maybe they didn't want it to be too.
Oh.
So like Mariah is ethereal, and not that a Maria can't be ethereal.
No,
but
no.
Like,
but at that time, what a great observation, friends. If you know the answer to why they call the wind Mariah,
or if you even know what song we're talking about. But yes.
Or if you've stumbled onto this podcast by accident, we're very sorry.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Yeah.
It's good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, I miss you, Rob.
Oh, I miss you. Okay, so we should probably catch up a little bit because I haven't seen you in a long time. What
it's
have you been
up?
Well, it's been a minute. 525,600 minutes.
Which is basically how long it's been since we've recorded an episode.
It really. Oh, that's really how Jonathan Larson.
How do you measure a year in the pandemic? Everything's
in
good.
In crying. In lots of crying.
Business shut down. I got no work. No, it's been good. It's been actually, thankfully, I've been teaching a lot. So that's been wonderful.
Yes.
In fact, this weekend, my students at the Professional Conservatory of Musical Theater, they graduated. And it was a really, really, really wonderful, wonderful time. They had a showcase. And it was a very proud, very proud teacher. And of course, raising a child is always an adventure.
Crawford now.
Yeah. So listeners, if you've listened to us for any amount of time, you've sort of been through the gamut. You've heard it all. But now my son is almost three. He's going to turn three in June. And he is just full of life. He is so happy and he loves all things dinosaurs and cars and He's very empathetic, and he's a good kid, and he's just really, really wonderful. And it's just an adventure every day.
He is adorable. Really, I'm not going to ask about when a brother or sister might come, because I know I know people don't like that question. But
we thought we'd have two, and then we had the one, and we were like, okay, this is good for now. Let's just really invest in this. But no, it's been really amazing. That was one of the silver linings of the whole pandemic, because I was home all the time. So for the last 2 years, I've really gotten to you know, be with him and spend quality time with him. The last 8 months I've been teaching and working and doing a normal schedule, so I've been away a little bit, but to have that foundation has been really, really, really wonderful. And I couldn't be happier. So yeah, it's been really good.
Well, I couldn't be happier for you. Okay, yeah,
thank you. All right, Rob, what's going on in your life?
I don't, he doesn't need a brother or sister, it's okay.
you can be the great uncle, the great as in wonderful, capital G, not old. But,
well, no, it's an old. I have so much gray. Whatever's left of my hair is so gray now. But no, I'll be anything you want me to be. Call me Uncle Rob, and I'll take him to shows.
Definitely.
He can write about it in his autobiography. Rob used to show up in his jalopy in a straw hat, ready to take me to see the newest Follies. It was 2030, and I don't know why he still wore this hat. Or drove this old
car. Or drove the jalopy.
Or even knew what the Follies were.
Exactly. Or what a jalopy is. How you been busy? I know a lot of things that you've been doing. So why don't you tell us a little bit.
A theater company had our second season.
Loved
J2
it.
Musical Theater Spotlight. We did a class act, A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine, and The Baker's Wife.
Yeah.
And those were our three shows. And I'm so touched because lots of our podcast listeners showed up.
So
thank you all.
That's wonderful.
It was very sweet. And now we're talking about what we're going to do next year for season three. Okay. So if anyone's got ideas, pitch them our way. Should I put Robert and Elizabeth on the list, Kevin?
I've got a couple ideas. Got a couple. I would love to see a Harold Rome. I think a Harold Rome show might be nice.
What do you want? Fanny?
Fanny, maybe Destry, like Destry Rides Again. Come on. I Can Get a Free Wholesale is really interesting. I don't know if it holds up as well, but I think that it could really be very interesting, and it's got quite a good score. And David Merrick produced it. There was a lot of credibility to it.
I like that score. I really like that score.
It's probably not Gone with the Wind, though, I'm thinking.
You mean Nay Scarlet Tokyo Original Cast Recording 1974 White Cover Scarlet? I think that's what you meant to say.
That's the one and only. Great songs, though. Great songs.
It actually is a really great score. But I don't think we can burn Atlanta on that tiny stage.
But I would be curious some of the things that you're thinking about, because there are so many hidden gems out there that really deserve to be re-explored, other than Goldilocks. You know, there's
Angel,
of course. But those are never going to be done. But
Who knows?
It's fun to dream.
What's that from? That was beautiful.
I don't know.
She
likes basketball. How about that?
Oh, yes.
It's nice to dream. Yeah, there you go.
I'll be honest with you. You like it or you don't like it? It's one of my favorite songs. What is that? What is that half-half sign? What is that?
I don't know. Sometimes I love it, and sometimes I'm like, I don't know.
She likes basketball.
How about that?
It's the rhythm of a dribbling ball.
Something in common. I feel it. It's like hit over my head.
Get it right on the nose there. I was convinced I could be a musical theater actor on Broadway because I grew up listening to people like Jerry Orbach, who like is a beautiful singer, but pitchy in some like live performances.
Oh, they had, remember when they redid the Promises album, they remastered it. Yeah, they remastered it because it was so, you know, it,
But I thought like, oh, if you can sing like that and be on Broadway, I've got it made. Well, I was wrong.
You are a fantastic performer. You're so funny. Wrong. I'm obsessed. But you have to figure also, Jerry Orbach was inventing it. You know, he didn't go to school for
acting. Boy, that's a good point.
He just was doing it. You know, that whole generation of performers had to kind of make it up as they go along. And for him to say, all right, no, it's the singing has got to be there, but it's more about the storytelling. Oh, Boy,
you're right
for that.
You're right. You're right.
I don't know.
No, you're right.
Little That's musical... still
pitchy. I'm little... Okay, now here's some little musical theater trivia for you.
Ooh.
Here we go. In Promises, Promises, he invites her to the basketball game, right? She doesn't show up. But in the movie The Apartment, the source material, he invites her to see a Broadway musical and she doesn't show up. What Broadway musical does he invite her to?
How Now, Dow Jones. No, oh,
that's a, not a bad choice. It's The Music Man.
Of course.
He gets tickets to The Music Man.
See, I'm not a movie buff like you are, Rob. I haven't even seen The Apartment. I'm ashamed.
I know.
Is it? Yeah. I honestly haven't seen it.
Have you ever seen
a lot of the classics?
Shock and Promises, Promises?
No, because there's not a lot of productions of Promises, Promises that are being done, really. So
I would love to. You just wait.
Yeah, I wish. That'd be fun, actually. Yeah.
I actually really love that.
I went through a phase in my life where I listened to that score probably every day. Because when it was remastered, they gave you a double disc, right? They gave you the remastered score and then like
the original,
and you heard all this new, the strings, everything just sounded so more vibrant. But I think every one of those little songs, as dated and problematic as some of them are, is a bop. You know, there is like, you know, the whole upstairs, two flights up.
It's so
70s.
For $86.50 a month.
And this is a Burt Bacharach score, folks. So it's got that whole bouncy, contagious, hummable score. That's really, I don't know, I like it.
And then it's got Jill O'Hara singing I'll Never Fall in Love Again. And
yep,
worked with her once. Okay, so I'm just gonna move on.
Okay, all right. Segue.
Move on. Thank you. That was my rock version. Okay, so yes, I've been doing that. I've been finally seeing some theater. Whoa, I got to see Plaza Suite, first show I ever directed in high school, my friend.
No, Plaza Suite. Wow.
Yep.
Boy, and I ahead of your time.
Oh yeah, I was a junior and I cast myself in the leading role,
and starred. And directed it. You starred and directed it.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Bold, Rob. Very bold.
Well, you know, much like Andre Gregory, I see myself as a visionary who doesn't know how to use Zoom. Remember, Kevin, remember you thought he was testing us? You thought he knew?
I still think that he was playing.
He knew how to use Zoom and he just wanted to fuck with us.
It was like one of his little like theater techniques. This guy like had us for 15 minutes and he was just sitting there.
Just looking at us.
Just trying to figure out, who are these guys? What are they?
Well,
I could get to know them on, you know, based on their reaction to this.
Oh, yes. This
theater experiment that he gave.
Oh,
us.
Absolutely. I'm sure like Wallace Shawn called him that night and he was like, well, you'll never believe what I did tonight. I had two men looking at me and I thought, well, what if I put them in a dramatic situation?
Yes. Yes. And I see how their human natural behavior took over.
And it was fascinating, Wally. It was just fascinating. Wallace Shawn is like, you're not wearing clothes again, are you?
Yeah, and he's like, I'll write a 10-hour play about this, actually.
Poor Wallace Shawn. Okay, so anyway, I saw Plaza Suite.
Yeah.
And God, whatever happened to the Boulevard comedy?
Like, may not know what that means. Obviously, so many of us know what that means, but tell us, what is a Boulevard comedy, Rob?
Boulevard comedy is kind of what sitcoms became. And back in the 50s and 60s, it was the tired old businessman comedy, which was Neil Simon comedy, Woody Allen's Don't Drink the Water. Comedies that had no sort of substance to it. Like, you're not supposed to leave with a big moral message.
You don't have to think. You can just go and have a good time.
You know, you just go in and you just like enjoy yourself.
Mm.
And so things like, will success spoil Rock Hunter? The 7-Year Itch. And the list go. Boeing is actually an example of a Boulevard comedy. So it's just a play that goes, it makes you like, Plaza Suite fits that category. And I was worried going into it because I was like, it's a very dated piece. The whole second act is about name dropping. And if you don't know who Yvette Nemieux is, you might be a little bit behind. Thank God I did. And the woman in the oxygen mask next to me, she also knew. She was kind enough to give me a ride back to the home. She said, whatever happened to Yvette Nemieux? And I said, I don't know, whatever happened to your pants, madam. And so we had a nice time.
She said, here, you want some?
You want some? You want some? Did I tell you that at the time I saw very warm for, no, it was a very warm for May? No.
Oh, it sounds like it.
Jerome Kern. I married an angel. I married an angel at Encores, and the guy started to sing It's Very Warm for May, and I swear to you, this yenta behind me said, it's already April! Full voice. And some old queen went over and yelled at her. And it was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, only at Encores could that kind of fight happen.
Yeah, I mean, where there's really no
in the,
fight.
In the balcony, yeah.
In the balcony. Oh, I don't like that balcony up there. It scares me.
It's too far away. You're like a football field away.
Yeah. Right? So anyway, I was like, whatever happened to the Boulevard Comedy? I was a little bit worried that it was going to be dated. It's not dated. These performances are fantastic. Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker are wonderful. It's so nice to see him doing comedy again. Like, the second act and third act. The third act is brilliant. The third act is absolutely fantastic between the two of them. The second act, they got really well stylistically. The first act, she's got this whole fucking show on her shoulders.
Mm.
But I forgot what a brilliant actress she is.
She started out on stage. I mean, she's been doing it for a long time. She really is wonderful. It's nice to have them back.
Yeah, and if you don't know Plaza Suite, folks, it's a Neil Simon play from 1968. It's a two-hander, ideally, and it was George C. Scott and Maureen Stapleton, and each act they play a different couple that all just happened to have had the same hotel room at the Plaza Hotel. And this is Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker, and he's a little uneven in the first act, but the second and third act, my God, that third act is a home run. Just laughs, and it makes you appreciate how versatile she is as an actress. Beautiful set design by John Lee Beatty, former guest.
And he was too. Broderick, we had.
And Matthew Broderick, and he was great. But really nicely done. A really beautiful performance from the three of them. So, folks, if you're in town, go see Plaza Suite. Maybe we'll rerun the Matthew Broderick episode just to get a sense. I thought that was so fantastic when he was on.
He was lovely. He was lovely.
Yeah, so Plaza Suite. And also, if you want any more opinions that Kevin and I might have, but you want them in print, I encourage you to go buy 50 Key Stage Musicals at Routledge Press or on Amazon, or support your local Black-owned bookstore. I think it's good to support local. So 50 Key Stage Musicals, that's also what I've been working on.
Oh, and tell us more about that. I know that some of our listeners are familiar, but what is this?
Yes. So I was hired by Routledge Press to write a book that makes a case for the 50 most influential musicals, not influential culturally, but influential on the genre. And I decided it would probably be great to have other people besides me in there. So I asked 47 other people to each write a chapter. Kevin's chapter was on Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. Amazing. And thank you. If you miss our voices, you can go to 50 Key Stage Musicals, the podcast, where each chapter gets its own podcast episode with a special guest.
That's fantastic. I like that. And how did you pick, I'm just curious, how did you end up, I'm sure you had a lot of musicals on the cutting room floor. I'm sure some people have opinions about, like, why'd you include this one, not this one.
Where's Pickwick?
Goes to Charlotte Ray.
Did not expect that.
No, Charlotte.
How did you, no. How did you pick them? What was the criteria?
The criteria was you had to say that if it wasn't for musical A, you wouldn't have had musicals B, C, D, and E. So that was what we did. And so every musical that we did, we had like a little web going out of it to show that, you know, how you could justify it. Musicals that did not make, and I'm interested to hear what people have to say, because I'm interested to hear, like, how could you not put in blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But like one of my favorite shows is The Music Man. That's not in there.
Yes, a lot of shock over that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I love Music Man, but I was like, I cannot point to what did it influence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't find it. That's not in there. In hindsight, I wish I had put in like one of the princess shows. Because that I feel like we have a big gap, but maybe next time when we do a second edition, maybe I'll put in one of the princess shows. Right. Yeah.
Well,
we were almost not going to put in Hamilton because we couldn't figure out, because it's so soon.
So new. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, we're like, sure. It was hard for us to figure out what other shows are now created because Hamilton existed. Right. But I think we found our way in, so we're good. Yeah, amazing. Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen were two that we were on the fence about. But mm-hmm. read the book. Let us know your opinions. Let us know your thoughts. I'm curious.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Tell us the title again.
50 Key Stage Musicals published by Routledge Press.
Lovely. And we have a little event coming up in a week.
We're
reprising our trivia night, folks.
Oh, yes, we are. Yes, we are. We're doing, our charity is called Maya's Hope, and it's helping out children that are special needs that are currently in the Ukraine that need assistance. And so once again, you know the drill, you can Venmo Robert-Schneider-5, the number 5, and $5 more if you want. And all that money goes to the charity. We don't keep a cent of it. It goes right to the charity. So please join us. And Kevin, what's the theme of this week's trivia?
Well, we thought we'd reprise a popular theme that we did a couple years ago during the pandemic, and that would be the theme of Stephen Sondheim. We're different questions, I think, but yes. but more trivia about our great, great, late Stephen Sondheim. And it's always a fun time. I mean, I'll be playing and singing some songs in one of the categories. Rob will have his witty banter and witty questions in another one of them. The questions in some categories will be so, so hard that only Rob will get them, and maybe one or two other people. But no, we really want you to be there because it's a nice time for camaraderie and to celebrate this little crazy art form that we love so much.
Yes, and all the money goes to a great cause, and that's always nice to see your faces.
Yes.
We miss seeing you. But now, hopefully you've missed us because that's going to justify what we're going to do next.
It's time.
Which is give you a favorite thing. All right, Mr. Thomas, who goes first?
I'll go first because I know that you've got. I was going. I know that you have some good ones or a good one. So I was truly shocked that the one that I'm going to talk about. I probably looked it up 3 times, thinking that we talked about it.
Oh my God!
Can't believe it. And if we have talked about it, everyone just pretend like we haven't. But I really think this is the first time we've talked about it. This is a video. This is from a concert. I'm going to go back to the way we used to do this, where you have to guess what it is, because I think you'll guess it right away. This is when you and I would have been in our most indelible, impressionable years growing up. This would have been the late 90s. Mm-hmm. This was a concert that was so epic that I don't think that we've ever come close to a concert that celebrated the art form and preserved it the way that this one night at Carnegie Hall did. And it's revisiting again. I am
my favorite. Yes. Broadway, The Leading Ladies?
Yes.
Get the fuck out. Wow.
You remember this?
Yeah, how have we never covered?
I know, Rob. All right. Oh boy, I gotta sit up because I'm getting excited. This was called My Favorite Broadway, The Leading Ladies. Now, I know that some of you are listening and you're nodding your head vigorously saying, oh, yes, of course, this is amazing. I grew up with it. 1998, picture it, you know, September 28th, 1998, Carnegie Hall, one night concert. In this concert, directed by, for the stage, Scott Ellis, great Scott Ellis, previous guest.
Oh, Scott.
You know, and David Thompson did all the banter and he wrote that kind of the book behind it. But really, it was just a collection of all of the leading ladies of Broadway of the previous, I would say 40, 50 years. And what you have is this collection of almost 3 hours worth. The video is on YouTube, folks, so just type that in the old YouTube. The only unfortunate thing is that you have to watch an ad every 4 minutes and the ads come like right in the middle of the song. I'd rather have, and right into the ad. It's not cute. It's not fun at all. I got very frustrated. But the concert is there and it's free. And it is so, I think, important to watch this on for many, many, many reasons. There is the camp. There is the comedy. There is the queens. There is every single thing you can think of in between. Let me, I could go through the whole thing. I want to give you sort of the highlights of what this evening was, because it really was, I forgot how special it was, Rob. I watched it growing up, and it was so, and now it's fun. My favorite thing about musical theater in this art form is that you can love something at 18 and then you can love it at 28 and then you're like 41 and you like it again and you get something out of it differently because you have different contexts. This goes with the books that I read. This goes with cast recordings. This goes with every single facet of this. And I love that everything ages and beautifully and you get more out of it. Sometimes your opinions change a little bit. Sometimes you didn't. Like there are performances that I never got before and now I get in a different way.
I'm so curious you said that. Like who, can you think of one like off the top of your head?
Yeah, no, I've definitely. Dorothy Loudon. I watched Dorothy Loudon's performance. Mm. So in the concert, you get about, I would say almost a dozen performances of these grand dames of musical theater who are singing the songs that they sang originally. Let me give you a list of the ones. So this is people that, you know, some years earlier, sometimes it's only a couple years earlier, like Faith Prince. Faith Prince is giving I'm Going Back from Bells Are Ringing. That was about to be produced, actually. Then you got Faith Prince singing, Adelaide's Lament. So that was in 1992, so that's 7 years earlier. Then you've got Priscilla Lopez singing Nothing from Chorus Line, which was 20 years earlier, 23 years earlier. You've got Leah Delaria, who sings I Can Cook, but on the town that she revived and was, you know, well known for. Deborah Monk had just done Steel Pierce singing Everybody's Girl. Then you get the real legends like Jennifer Holliday singing, and I'm telling you, I mean, she was the penultimate, I think she's the penultimate singer, and she literally brought the audience to their feet with her, that very fascinating version of the song, which is truly iconic in every single way. I don't know if anybody could do some of the things that she did and get away with it, and yet everything from the back bend holding the microphone like she's gonna swallow it at the very end of the song to the my favorite part is when she holds the like, hey, and she tells the orchestra to cut off her hand.
Yeah, she's waving
in the background like Paul Gemignotti, stop, it's me, it's my turn, all that stuff. I live for it. You got Dee Hody, Could I Leave You, which she did at Paper Mill Playhouse. But then you've got the real legends like Elaine Stritch. She was the last, you know, solo singer. She gives you, you know, here's the Ladies Who Lunch. I mean, I talk about a legend. But then, to answer your question, finally, it really was the Dorothy Loudon, who we would lose just a couple years later.
Oh, yeah.
Dorothy Loudon, who won the Tony Award for playing Miss Hannigan in Annie, who was known as this comedian, you know, really legendary comedian. And I did not appreciate her when I was younger the way that I now do. And we interviewed Billy Goldenberg, the guy who wrote, you know, Ballroom, which this song was from. I love this song so much. I think it's such a perfect song about love, about, you know, wanting to be with someone. And if you can't have all of them, but you love them so much, you just want a part of them, that's worth it. And she, you feel like she's delivering the last performance of her life. And I don't know if it is, but you get the sense that this is like an epic moment. It was not a big hit. It was directed by Michael Bennett in the early 80s. Not a huge hit, but for her to come back, you know, 15 years later and sing this song, it is just, and her voice is okay. It's not on like the way it was when you watch her sing some of the other the funny stuff she did, but it's so acted and performed so stunningly. It's just magical, Rob. And I did not appreciate her the way that I do now. That's definitely an example of that.
You know what's so weird? I'm trying to think, because she did Ballroom in what, like 78? And this concert was 98?
That's right.
So it's 20 years? 20 years from now, like 2002? So it's kind of like seeing Sutton Foster do Gimme Gimme.
That's right. I just recently watched that again, too. And when you play those number games,
I feel so old.
You want me to make it worse? Wait, what's the one that really got me? Priscilla Lopez. Priscilla Lopez singing. There was someone else that was, it was like removed from, when you watch the opening of the concert, it is the only two male people that are in drag, Tony Roberts and Robert Morris, RIP, we lost Robert Morris just recently, but they sing The Beauty That Drives a Man Mad from the musical Sugar, which was in 1972. So that's like 26 years before that concert, right? We are about 24 years since the concert. That's almost the same gap. That kind of rocks my world. That's the difference in time. Do you know what I'm saying?
God like almighty.
Isn't that crazy? Or Priscilla Lopez singing Nothing. Nell Carter singing with the great late Luther Henderson on, right? Luther Henderson on the piano, though, tickling the ivories with Ain't Misbehavin'. And then Nell comes in and sings the songs from that show. But I think perhaps some of the greatest moments. So those are what I would categorize as the great originals. Mm. Like seeing these originals, these original divas perform the things that make them good. I will give you my favorite part in just a second, but I wanted the other category of people are the up-and-comers. Now, the up-and-comers now are the ones who are actually now legitimate legends of in their own right now. We had Audra McDonald literally was the concert. I mean, she sang three different songs. She almost closed the concert. She was in the beginning. She did that really famous Andrew Lloyd Webber trio that everybody talks about.
The Webber Love Trio.
That the Webber Love Trio, that David Loud, I've got to shout him out, that he arranged. David Loud, the great music director and music arranger, did that. That was with Audra and
Maren Mazey
and my favorite of all time, Judy Kuhn. And they did three different Andrew Lloyd Webber songs, Unexpected Song, I Don't Know How to Love Him, and Love Changes Everything. And it was like a mashup before we actually knew what mashups were. And it's absolutely stunning. And it's ruined it for anyone else because it's so hard to do well. And they are just, but you get Audra, you get Maren, you get Judy, you've got Rebecca Luker giving you a masterclass on how to, you know, put over a golden age ballad, Falling in Love with Love. I mean, it is, boy, what that woman could do with a song and give you vocals and give you acting and put it all together and make you buy every single moment of the song. Same thing with where Audra at the end of the show, you're like, what could you possibly do, you know, after some of these legends? Like, you know, I think in the concert, I forget who, I think it's might be Jennifer Holliday, but then Audra comes out and she sings, you know, I Never Said I Love You. And you're like, what? Oh, yeah. Really? This is the song you're going to do? And yet it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. Maren Mazey singing Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. So you get this mix of classics and you get, I think, a real understanding of how you can make the honor, the history of these songs and the style of them, and yet sing them as if they are today, you know, and make people listen in a new way. But Rob, my favorite part of the concerts is perhaps the campier parts, we might call. We might say the more, shall we say, entertaining parts. Mm. One of the really cool ones is just a really cool idea was that Cabaret was running at the time, that, you know, the Alan Cumming one. So they took the Kit Kat girls and then they took Anna Kendrick, who now is a movie star. But Anna Kendrick was like 13, Tony nominated, but she was in, I think, High Society. Yes. And then they put her and she sings Life Upon the Wicked Stage with the Kit Kat girls. That's kind of wild and funky and weird. And I loved it. It's amazing. You also have someone who probably will remain in the 90s and the aughts, but really had one of the biggest careers of that time, and that would be Linda Eder, if you remember. Mm-hmm. Linda Eder, who sings one of her original songs, Someone Like You, because that's her, the song that made her famous. Like that's you. Right, that's right, just giving you notes. But because Linda is wonderful, but I would say she's not necessarily an interpreter of more than great, amazing singing, but the lyric is sort of, so then the bold choice to have her sing I Am I, Man of La Mancha. I Am I, Don Quixote. Yeah. And then, and if you want my favorite part of the song.
I hope it's my favorite part too. Go ahead.
She turns off stage and she's like just casual, because I've seen her in concert 2 years ago with Michael Feinstein. Boy, not a lot of charisma on that stage. But I said that out loud, but but she turns up stage waiting for her moment. She turns around and she gives you like Mariah Carey whistle tones.
Oh,
and she
yes.
For no reason whatsoever, but just because she can. Yeah. And she's like, aah! And then she belts right after that. I am key change. I duck. It's sick. It's crazy. It's stupid. It shouldn't work. And it's amazing.
It works.
It's absolutely amazing. But perhaps my favorite part of the evening.
Oh, no.
Is.
Oh, no.
You get another person who is one of the great women of musical theater who actually really never was on stage. You know, she did a little bit, but she produced, but she celebrated, she uplifted theater. And that would be Rosie O'Donnell.
Rosie.
Her dialogue is so freaking funny. She's so funny. She jokes about how she's always wanted to do this song that was written just for her by Cantor and Ebb. So she starts singing Liza with a Z. It's Liza with a Z, not Liza with an S, because Liza with an S. And then Liza sneaks up behind her, right? And then they have this like witty, they sing the end of the song. It's funny. It's cute. It's wonderful. And then Liza sings a song. She sings Sing Happy, which is like, that's her legendary song from Flora the Red Menace. You get to see, she's not in great voice. She's not. You can feel the wear on her voice. She's not singing like she did 10 years earlier. However, after she gets done with Sing Happy, which is a showstopper, as it should be, she sings Some People from Gypsy. She tells a little story about Papa and how she, you know, went to go see it when she was a kid, and that was the thing. She wanted to be an ice skater, then Papa took me, and she saw it, she goes into this performance. It's the tempo is the fastest tempo I've ever heard of that song. Some things to consider while you're watching it, other than the fact that she wears this incredible muumuu. The dialogue that she does, it's legendary. We've all talked about it. But in the middle of the song where she talks to Papa, it's just a couple lines in the show. He's like, "You're not getting 88 cents out of me, Rose." And then she's like, "Well, I'll get it now. Get my kids out." But Liza is like,
she's like,
"What do you mean? Okay, I see. Like, lend more money to the neighbor next door to go to the tracks." Like she makes up all this dialogue.
All of a sudden, it's Shirley Valentine. You're
like, she's like, "You get the guy next door to go to the tracks," and you're like, "What are you talking about?" Like, she's got this whole ad lib that, and she pretends to listen to him.
She's listening.
What do you mean? I'm gonna get my kid. I'm gonna go. And then she turns around upstage.
Yep.
She does the jazz hands that you see. Da 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 da. And she flips around again, and she's like, "Goodbye." And every orchestral hit, she hits with her hands.
Oh, yes.
Blueberry pie. Bah! Good riddance to all the socials I should. And she changes the melody. And Paul Gemmiotti is like beating the tempo as fast as he can. You know, who actually was absolutely incredible as a music director. I was really impressed by his sensitivity when people were singing. But the Liza Minnelli performance of Some People, I think, is truly one of the most campy. No one should get away with that. And yet, I would not want any other version other than the version that Liza Minnelli delivers in that Some People.
And you've seen the YouTube clip, right? Somebody gives Liza Minnelli $88, 88 bucks. Have you seen that?
What? No.
Oh, I'm going to post this in the info description. Somebody put together all the monologues that she's ever done in that song, and there's 10 of them.
No.
You've never seen this?
No.
Oh, I'm going to share it for everybody.
Because so the thing that's fascinating, and I'll get off of this in a minute, folks, but the reason why I'm so fascinated is because clearly I like to see great singing, great storytelling, really everything coming together. She's giving you straight up camp because that's nothing natural. I mean, it's performative. It is what Liza does so great. And yet she's giving you beats in between lines. She's really trying to be like, she adds, like, she changes lyrics and changes like the context of the song to try to make it like conversational at the beginning part. What do you mean? Some people can try.
And you're
kind of like, all right, well, she's really having a dialogue right now. She's really having a conversation, albeit one with sequins and and jazz hands and hitting the orchestra sounds, but I buy it all and I'll take it. So that's probably one of my favorite moments of it. And I could probably go on and on and on, and I probably have already, but, and then there's things that there's a CD that was put out that you probably could listen to a lot of these songs, but there's some performances that are kind of a little forgotten, like Judy Kuhn singing Don't Rain on My Parade, Karen Ziemba singing I Want to Be a Rockette from the Alan Menken lesser known show called Kicks, with actual Rockettes in it. It's just the whole thing. There's not a dud. I think it's a masterclass on performing this art form. I can't believe that they assembled this roster of like just goddesses and really gave us this history lesson in celebrating the old, the new, the contemporary of that time. I don't see anything like that today. I really don't. And I think it's harder to do, but I would love to see something like that where you get 15 of the originals back. Yeah. You know, give me Sutton singing Gimme Gimme one more time.
Christine Ebersole doing Grey Gardens.
Give me Kristen Chenoweth singing My New Philosophy.
Yeah.
And 25 years is a lot of time, and that would be since this concert.
Yeah.
Let's get Idina Menzel singing, I don't know, the her monologue from Rent. Nobody wants to see that. But her and I don't know. I just think there's it would be so magical to have something like that again. And it's idealistic, because I don't know if it could possibly happen. But it really is a special concert. So my favorite thing is my favorite Broadway, the leading ladies.
Wow. Okay. Um, I I'm going to watch it again tonight. Because I also love Jennifer Holliday doing If He Walked Into My Life.
Yes. And a jazzy version of it too. Yep. It's really good.
And yes, we say this all the time and we really do mean it, which is Kevin and I do not talk to each other about what the favorite things are going to be prior to getting on the air. And there's always a fun coincidence. And here's my favorite thing for this week. Carnegie Hall, 1987. It still holds the record at Carnegie Hall for being the longest consecutive engagement. 3 weeks at Carnegie Hall, my friends. This performer performed at Carnegie Hall, her solo show, three consecutive weeks in 1987. She had just gone out into the Betty Ford Clinic prior to having left the production of The Rink. Yes, my friends, also at Carnegie Hall today is Liza, Carnegie Hall, 1987.
I'm so excited.
The full album is called At Carnegie Hall. Which also holds kind of an amazing record. It was out of 200 pop albums, pop music albums on the Billboard 200. It's at 156. Now, here's the really interesting thing about this, folks, and I really should have looked at this before I talked to you about it today. I don't think you can find it on Apple Music or Spotify. So you might actually have to go to Amazon and buy a copy of this. And let me tell you, it is worth it. The reason I'm talking about this today is very simple. Liza has been in the news a lot lately after the Academy Awards section. I was sitting there and I after Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, I thought to myself, can this ceremony get any more bizarre? And indeed it did. Because for Best Picture, here comes Liza Minnelli. And she was so... she looked rattled, she looked confused, and it was a very, for a woman who still exudes such strength and such like verve in her life, it was so sad to see her where she is right now. That's all. And Lady Gaga was incredibly helpful, although Michael Feinstein is now saying that they sabotaged Liza.
They sprung that wheelchair on her at the last minute.
I don't know. Okay, cool. What I did love about that, I was like, this can't get any more bizarre. And then it did, because I am pretty sure a producer looked at Liza Minnelli and said, you're going to announce the Best Picture winner, but don't take up a lot of time because we're running long. And that's why the Best Picture goes to, and she looks at Liza Minnelli. Liza Minnelli goes, okay, Coda. Coda, Best Picture. She was like, I won't take any time. I have two lines.
I'll take a note.
Okay. And Coda. Great. I'll make it one line. We'll get out of here a little faster. That's how daddy likes it. And she was just like, okay, Coda. So I was like, yep, this is the cherry on top of the most absurd Oscar ceremony I've ever seen in my life. But it got me to thinking, which is, I don't want anyone to be thinking about her in negative terms. Because first of all, she got herself out there. She was still funny. She was still vibrant. So what? She's in a wheelchair. Big fucking deal. And I thought to myself, we need to celebrate her. And let me tell you something, my friends. On my other podcast, this was a thing.
Podcast. Love it. You. Love that podcast.
We did an Oscar bracket. And it was the Oscar bracket of the world of the Oscar's most awkward moments. And the winner for us was when Bette Davis went off script at the 1986 Oscars. Don't say that Liza was the most awkward thing ever to happen at the Oscars. 1986, Bette Davis off script. Oh, you don't know this?
No, okay. What happened?
I'm not a good gay person because I can't do an actual Bette Davis impression. I can only do Bette Davis older in her life. So this actually is going to kind of fit my wheelhouse here. It was 1986. They had asked Bette Davis to come in and announce the Best Actor nominees and then give the Best Actor winner. So they brought her out and she's like, I'm serving a beer. Now, the men who are the Best Actor nominees. Now, if you remember, we know this rule. What happens? The person goes, Kevin David Thomas for A Little Night Music. And then it's a clip of you. Okay. she didn't read anyone's names.
Uh-oh.
So the first clip starts to play of an actor. She doesn't say anything. Then out of nowhere, a second clip plays. Then she realizes she has to be saying the names. So she's like, James Woods, I'm missing. And it's like Sam Waterston. And so it's like everything is all screwed up. Anyway, the winner is Paul Newman. And the voiceover goes, accepting the award for Paul Newman is Robert Wise, who was like the president of the Film Academy and the director of Sound of Music, the director of West Side Story. He did not need any explanation of who he was whatsoever. That's like going into a Broadway house and someone being like, that's Patti LuPone. She's in it. We all know who she is. So Robert Wise comes up to accept the Oscar and he goes to lean into the microphone and she goes, wait a minute. I want to say a few words about you, Mr. Wise. Do you know? And she starts giving Robert Wise's entire resume and biography and will not leave the podium. To me, that is 10 times more awkward than, okay, Carter. But anyway, I wanted everyone to think of Liza in a positive light today. And so for me, I want us to look at Liza Minnelli at Carnegie Hall from 1987. What I love about this particular album more than anything is, first of all, it's two albums, which is incredible. So you get four sides in total. It's her coming out of her rehabilitation. It's people were very worried about her. And I think that this album, even just the first five songs, show you her range and how brilliant of an actress she is and what a wonderful vocalist she was. Because I know, like you just said in the last one, you know, she wasn't in great voice, but she still performs. This album, I think, is her at the peak of her powers, not only just in terms of music, but in terms of interpretation. She opens it up for, oh, and all the way, by the way, I thought you would love this. It was, music director was Marvin Hamlisch. Fred Ebb did all the new lyrics and all the book stuff. And it's got a 47-piece orchestra. It starts with her singing, I Happen to Like New York, Cole Porter. Then she moves into a medley of Here I'll Stay, Our Love is Here to Stay. She sings songs from a House of Flowers. She sings Old Friends, which to me, I was like, how she never played Mary Flynn? Like, she would have been brilliant. Don't you think?
Hands down. I mean, like that, there's so many parts that I wish that we could have seen her play, but for sure.
Can't you see her like sitting at the bar? So what do you do? I shrink.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you really do?
Even I like, really hey, drink. Yes, all the songs.
Right? She does If You Had Them, But You Did. So she covers Jerry Herman, Comden and Green, Kander and Ebb, obviously, all dressed in Halston. She does You Better Sit Down, Kids, the Sonny Bono song, but she but she marries it, no pun intended, to Married from Cabaret, which is great. She and then, of course, at the end is her Kander and Ebb medley. She sounds better in 1987 than she's done in any other recording, I think, before or since.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, one of the things I really love in this album, there's no video record of it. So we can't.
I'm shocked by that. I know. I would have thought that there was some, you know, bootleg.
So you can't. I mean, if there is out there, somebody let me know. But you can't see. And she's clearly doing bits and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so you have to guess what they are. But my favorite is right before she goes into, Ring Them Bells.
There is classic.
There is one queen who recognizes the vamp and just screams. And I want to know who that queen is. I want to know, were you the screaming
it's gotta
queen?
It's got to be somebody we know.
That was like, because it literally, she goes, gather around, and we hear, and I'm like, got it. She's doing business during If, and that old queen is loving it as well. So I don't know who you are, queen, but come to me, bend to me. Do you have a video? Oh, no, he wouldn't have recorded it. No, because if he screamed and they saw him with the camera, please.
The ushers were all over that.
Absolutely. She also does a very contemporary song at the time, Somewhere Out There from An American Tale. which a critic, the New York Times critic on the concert, said it's actually a brilliant choice because it sort of marries Judy Garland's Somewhere Over the Rainbow through like a contemporary lens. Yeah, and I was like, that's great. But my personal favorite is when she's, her second to last song is Cabaret.
Of course.
And she goes, she goes at the end, and when I go, and the lyric is, I'm going like Elsie. She goes, when I go, and she holds the note out forever, and then goes, I'm not going like, and the whole crowd goes,
loses it. They lose it.
Because they know that she's going to be clean and sober now. Everyone talks, no, I'm being serious. I mean, the fact that she had to go through,
you know? Yeah.
So mine is Liza Minnelli at Carnegie Hall. And there's a moment in Buckle Down Winsocky where there's like this very long pause and then the audience goes wild and you don't know what she's doing.
Yeah.
Folks, I did my research. It was at the top of Act Two. She came out in a very like nice brown dress. And then during Buckle Down Winsocky was like, I don't feel comfortable. Ripped off the brown dress and underneath was a Halston with sequins.
So when they're
going crazy, folks, that's why they're going crazy. I at least was able to find that out.
Amazing.
I know that everyone talks about Judy at the Palace, and my friends, I think if you want to find an album that goes right up there with that, seek out at Carnegie Hall, Liza Minnelli, 1987.
Rob, I just tried to look it up on Apple Music, and you're right. I'm shocked that it's. I wonder why.
Because it's
not a concert we talk like. We all talk about Judy at the Palace. I have the LP. You know, it is. You can get that everywhere, and I wonder if that's why we don't talk about this concert more. Is because it's just not accessible. It's just there's no record of it. But it makes no sense. How did you listen to it? How were you able? Did you find it on YouTube?
I had a CD of it years and years and years ago. I have it on my computer. Maybe I can find a way of like sharing it if somebody wants the link.
Man, it just but, like, kills me that you, it's just something that you can't, in this day and age where we can like literally get anything.
Yeah.
You know, we can't even.
And it wasn't on Spotify, right? No, I didn't. I couldn't find this, folks. If you all know of a way of accessing it, let us know. But once again, mine for this week was at Carnegie Hall, Liza Minnelli, 1987. Kevin's, once again, tying a thread in.
My favorite Broadway, The Leading Ladies, also featuring Liza Minnelli, but just about 11 years after this.
I love it. All right. So friends, don't forget, join us this Saturday, which is April 30th, I believe. Yes, right. April 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Stephen Sondheim Trivia. All the money goes to Maya's Hope, which is helping children with special needs over in the Ukraine right now, because Lord knows they need it. The donation is $5. We suggest you can give more. All the money goes to them directly. All right, my friends, it was so nice getting to talk to you all. Goodbye for now.
We miss you. We'll see you soon. And we'll have more episodes soon.
Yeah. We're getting back into the swing of things. All right, till next time.
Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RERISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.